Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Erevin is daf Chav Ches. It's 28 in Erevin. We started the third parak of Erevin, and we are in the discussion of what you could use for your Erev Tchum. You're going to make an Erev Tchum before Shabbos so that you can extend your Tchum Shabbos. You're only allowed to go within 2,000 amos of where you started Shabbos, where your Malkum Shviz, your point of center, is. Your point of center may include an entire city, but we'll talk about more about that later on in the Sechta. But in other words, you want to extend it, so therefore you want to move your Malkum Shviz and your point of center. So you do so by putting food down in the place where you want your new Malkum Shviz to be. So you put food down, and that's it, before Shabbos, and that's going to be Koni your Malkum Shviz. What kind of food do you use? So the Mishnah says any food you want. They're not limited. There's no limitation whatsoever in terms of the type of food that you can use. As long as it's something that sustains the human being. So as long as there's some sort of caloric value to it, so therefore you could use it. The only exception, says the Mishnah, that you can use is melach hamayim. You can't use salt, you can't use water. Salt and water, although they're important, but nevertheless they aren't considered mazon. It's not considered nourishing food, and so therefore they cannot be used. But with exception to mayim and mazon, you could use whatever you want. That's the first point that we discussed in the Mishnah, and it will segue into our Gemara, into a lengthy discussion about various types of foods, which may somehow fall somewhere in this category. Other points mentioned in the Mishnah is that this halacha of mayim and melach also is true by Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni, when I take my money, which I collected from my Maaser Sheni, meaning in the years 1, 2, and 4, and 5 of the Shemitah cycle, so the second Maaser is now Maaser Sheni. I don't give it to anybody, but rather I retain that fruit, that produce that grows in my field. And the Torah acknowledges the fact that it's impossible, nearly impossible, to bring it up to Yerushalayim every single time that I have Maaser Sheni. So what do? I take the Kedusha of the Maaser Sheni, I transfer it onto money, I take the money when next time I go to Yerushalayim, and in Yerushalayim I buy whatever I want to buy. And the Torah gives me a list of four examples of things that you could buy when you're in Yerushalayim with your Maaser Sheni money, and we'll talk more about that as well later on this morning. Then the only thing you can buy, again, with your Maaser Sheni money is Mayim HaMelech. Okay. We then brought in a third example of Mayim HaMelech, and that's when you make neder. You make a neder, I'm not going to eat any more mazon, right? I just had Pesach, I just had 11 meals on Pesach. Okay, if you want to include Sudas Mashiach, so that's 12 meals. So we just had, it was an eating fest. So after Pesach, you say, you know, dem and a mazon. I'm going to make a ned. I'm not going to have mazon anymore. So so you're allowed to eat mayim u'melach, because since they're not nourishing foods, so therefore those you're allowed to eat, but you're not allowed to eat anything else. I understood, by the way, it's hard to exist in this world without anything other than mayim u'melach, but you do need a little bit of bread. But okay. But that's the same basic point, is that mayim u'melach are not considered nourishing items. And then the Mishnah went on to make other points as well. We're going to come back to the other points of the Mishnah, but right now we're going to be focusing on these points of the Mishnah. And really, most of our day today is going to be dedicated to what you can buy with your Maaser Sheni money, and we're going to continue with that discussion today. So we saw yesterday a brisa that stated the following. I'm going back to Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. I'm just reviewing what we discussed yesterday. And before I quote the braisa, however, let me just back up one step. What if it's mayim and melach mixed together? In other words, the Nar Mishnah says that if I have mayim or melach, that's no good. That's no good for my Erev Tchumim. That's no good for my Maaser Sheni. Well, okay, good. In other words, that's water or that's salt. What if I combine water and salt together? So the Gemara presents a machlokas between the Amorayim, whether or not water and salt combine may be better than just simply water or salt. Okay? And then there was a question in the Gemara that maybe that would also be true not only by Erev Tchumim, that would also be true by Maaser Sheni as well. Meaning that when I go to Yerushalayim, I know I can't buy water, I know I can't buy salt, but if it's water and salt combined, so maybe that would work. Even for Maaser Sheni. Now on this, the Gemara challenge, now we'll say over the Braisa, on this, the Gemara challenge based on the Braisa. The Braisa quotes the opinion of Rav Yehuda ben Gadish. Rav Yehuda ben Gadish testified in front of Rabbi Eliezer that what we used to do is we used to take the money and purchase fish brine with kesef meiser. Now fish brine is just simply the juice, the schmaltz that comes out of the fish. So what we see from this braisa is what we're testing the limits of what you can buy with kesef meiser. The limits are shmaltz of a fish. But in other words, no way can you really buy salt or water, or even salt and water. So it's kind of hard to understand how we could even suggest that salt and water would work. And so the Gemara says, and in the braisa, the Gemara even objects to that position, that you could buy the tzir shel dagim, and maybe, right, this is the response, maybe that's only when there's kirvei dagim or raven behema. That's only when, maybe when the intestines of the fish are mixed together with the schmaltz, where you actually have actual fish, maybe then you could buy your meiser, use your kesef meiser on the fish, but not if it's just fish brine. Anyway, what do you see from that? That fish brine is really the outer limits of what you can buy with your kesef meiser. How in the world could you suggest that you could buy salt water with your meiser sheni money? That was the question. What was our answer? And this is going to lead us now into today's daf. The answer was, well, you're right. Salt water by itself, you can't buy with kesef meiser money. Maybe if there's a little bit of oil mixed in with the salt water. So in other words, the principal purchase of what I'm buying is really the oil. And the salt water comes along for the ride. This is a concept called havla'a, where I'm buying really multiple things, but I can zoom in and say that the principal purchase I'm really purchasing is the oil, and the salt and the water come along for the ride. I gave an example yesterday, just to reiterate the example of where we see havla'a take place in our lives. So we see it by lulav and esrog, meaning that in the Shemitah year, when we're buying lulav and esrog, and you're not allowed to make a schir, you're not allowed to be socher, you're not allowed to make a purchase over your esrog, because it's peir shvius, and you're not allowed to do commerce with peir shvius. So what do? We say that the money's essentially for the lulav, and the esrog comes along for the ride. This is known as havla'a. The Gemara now is going to bring a braisa that supports this idea of havla'a, the Hatanya. So we're now on Chavzayin Amud Beis, and we're going to now take it from the nearly the top of the Amud. We're starting now with the braisa that indicates that havla'a is in fact acceptable. The Gemara says, "V'hatanya v'lentan braisa ben bagbag omer babakar." Now we go to the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, where the Torah gives us four examples of what you can buy with your meister sheni money. The Torah says, I'm reading from the Pesukim, "Nasata bekesef etzarta kesef biyadecha v'alachna v'makom asher yivchar Hashem l'kecha bo, v'nasata kesef v'chol asher tava nafshecha." The Torah says, you can buy whatever you want, babakar v'tzon v'yan v'sheicha. And then the Torah gives four examples, oxen, sheep, wine, and sheichar. I'll leave sheichar right now undetermined. We're going to explain what it means in just a moment. Uvechol asher tish'acha nafshecha, anything you want, v'achalta sham lefnei Hashem l'kecha, v'samachta ata v'isecha. Okay, those of you who have been in the daf long enough, you already can see, without even seeing the Gemara upcoming, we have a style in this pasuk over here that fits in beautifully to what we normally refer to as klal uprat uklal. The Torah first telling us what we could buy. The Torah says, whatever you want. You buy whatever you want. Then the Torah gives four examples. Then the Torah goes on to say, whatever you want. So this is a classic klal uprat uklal. We're going to spend some time today discussing the rules of klal uprat uklal. Let's see all this inside. Right now we're focusing on just one point, and that's the point of havla'a. The Torah says, the Gemara says, when I buy an ox, obviously I'm buying an entire animal, so what do I get? Animal plus the hide. Okay? Now, hide obviously is not edible. Don't I have to eat what I'm buying with my kesef meiser? So already, right away, you see this concept of havla'a. No, in other words, the principal purchase is on the meat of the animal. The hide is just coming along for the ride. So a second example. You know, sheep, when you buy sheep, what a bonus you get. Not only do you get the hide of the sheep, you also get the wool that comes along on the back of the sheep. So that's fine. Obviously, you're not going to eat the wool. Again, this concept of havla. Here's such a big chiddush. Even if it's wine in a casket, where the casket obviously is inedible, nevertheless, you're buying the whole thing. You get the casket as well. Once again, this concept of havla. Temed, which is really just water, In other words, what happens is that after the wine is squeezed out of the grape, after the juice is squeezed out of the grape, so you're left with is basically some leftover grapes, grape skins, grape seeds. So what do you do with it? What did they do with it? They threw it into water, and basically it made the water a little bit acidic. It gave the water like a little bit of a grape taste. Okay? Grape-flavored water. This is called temed. You could buy that with your kesef meiser money. Now that's obviously the biggest chiddush, because there you can make a simple argument, it's water. And we know you're not allowed to buy water with your kesef meiser money, but because it's infused with the taste of the grape, so that's fine as well. So now we have this drasha of Ben Bagbag. It shows us this whole, the whole idea of Havla'ah. And now we're ready to move on. But before we move on, however, discussing the generalities of the Klal upon a Klal, Rav Yochanan has one particular question about this drasha of Ben Bagbag. In fact, this question bothered him so much, he didn't know an answer to this question, and he was begging somebody to help him out understand this. I'm Rav Yochanan. Man de matargin liba bakar liba de Ben Bagbag. If someone can explain to me the first point of Ben Bagbag's drasha, specifically Bakar, if someone can explain to that, Malvina Manea Basrela Be Kasusa, what I will do is I'm going to schlep his clothing to the bathhouse, meaning I'll become his attendant, meaning I'll turn into his Talmud. And I don't think, again, tone is so important over here in terms of understanding. In other words, I imagine there's sincerity to what he's saying, meaning he really genuinely does not understand what Bakar is doing in the context of this whole drasha. The Gemara is about to explain, and if somebody could explain it to him, he'll call him his rabbi, he'll shlep his clothing to the bathhouse. So my time, because Rav Yochanan goes on to explain, look, I understand that each one represents a chiddush, but Bakar really doesn't represent any chiddush. For example, the Lo Tzarich Mai Tzricha Di Kasev Rechmana BaBakar Havai Mina Bakar Hu De Mizdavin Agabe Oro Mishim De Gufehu. Well, let's start with the arguments. Well, Bakar, yeah, I do understand the original need of Bakar, because the Torah needs to tell me that I can purchase the hide together with the animal. But there, hide and animal are all part of one entity. It's one singular entity. But here we're talking about the shearings of a sheep. No, well, not the shearings. It didn't come off yet. But the tufts of wool that are connected to the sheep, you can say that's less part of the sheep. In fact, we know that because you could shear it off. So there, the argument could be, before buying a sheep with my kesef meiser money, maybe we should first shear off the sheep. That's the chiddush of tzon. You don't have to. And now when it comes to the sheep, you understand that it's not as big a chiddush because the wool is connected to the body of the sheep. But wine in a barrel, meaning they are not connected with one another, maybe you would have argued that you must return the barrel. That when you buy a barrel of wine with the kesef meiser money, the purchase is only going on the wine, not on the barrel, and you have to return the barrel after the purchase is over. The ikas rachman abiyayin hava amina mishim dahayinu niturusei. And then finally, we can make this argument that, look, at least the wine needs the barrel, meaning without the barrel, the wine is not going to be preserved, so the barrel is sort of like a shomer of the wine. It's almost like the peel of a fruit, the skin of a fruit. Temed is the biggest chiddush because it's kiyu ba'alma. All it is just simply an infusion of taste into the water. But essentially, what is it? It's water. And so therefore, you could have made the argument, you can't buy water with kesef meiser money, I can't buy temet with kesef meiser money. So kesef rechmana sheikhar, and that's why the Torah says the word sheikhar. Okay, so what have we just done? So we went forward, meaning, Bakar's a chiddush, but not as big as Tzon. Tzon is a chiddush, but not as big as Yayin. Yayin is a chiddush, but not as big as temet. So now we went progressively higher in chidushim. But now, as we go higher in chidushim, so you realize that really I don't need Bakar. Meaning because whatever chiddush we've obtained with Bakar, we certainly got with Tzon. Meaning Bakar, I'm buying the hide. Tzon, I'm buying the tufts of wool. So that's a bigger chiddush. Once I got Tzon, I can look back on Bakar and say, I don't need you. Which is basically going to be Rav Yochanan's point. But Let's now go, what we're going to do now is go the other direction. Meaning we looked at progressive chidushim from Bakar all the way to Temed, to Shechar. Now let's try to do it in reverse. Ikaz rechmana b'shechar hava mina my shechar devela ki'ilos deperahu. If the Torah only wrote Shechar, here's what I would have thought. Shechar? That can't be talking about water. You know what Shechar is talking about? Shechar is talking about figs. In the good old days, figs were intoxicating. Okay, I don't know what happened. You know, in the past couple thousand years, figs are no longer intoxicating. But okay, the milk and figs in the good old days used to be intoxicating foods, and so therefore, I might have thought Sheikh is talking about figs. And the reason why I would have thought that, if no context is given, I would have said, yeah, you're going to buy a food, not water, not grape infused taste water. So I would have thought that Sheikh is referring to fig. But then, if it's a question of purchasing wine in the barrel, I would have thought, okay, wine, yes, I understand. But not the barrel. So that's why, in other words, here we're going backwards. So had it been just Sheikhar, I wouldn't have gotten the Chiddush of wine, meaning wine with the barrel. Because of Rechmani Yain Agabe Kankano Hadahin Tirusa Avatsan Agabe Gizasa Malo. And if I got the Chiddush of wine with the barrel, I might have thought, okay, wine with the barrel, but the barrel there is to be a shomer over the wine. But the shearings, the wool that's connected to the sheep, I might have thought, first shear the animal, then buy the sheep. Because of Rechmani Tzon, Dafilo Agab Gizasa, Babakar Lamali. And now we're finally left to Bakar. What's the need? Meaning, what's it coming to teach me? If it's coming to teach me that I'm allowed to collect the hides of the animal, keep the hides of the animal, I already got that from Tzon. I certainly got it from Yayin. And again, Sheikhar is a whole different point. That's water infused with the taste of grape. But in other words, Bakar's there to teach me really nothing, even in the context. It's not coming to teach me anything. So Kasav Rechman Ababakar Lasuya Oro. And Rav Yochanan says, and I know what you could argue. You could argue that, look, if all I had was just Tzon, I didn't have Bakar, I might have thought, here's what you can do. Tzon, shear the sheep. Then buy the sheep with the Kesav Maaser money. And I can hang on to the hide of the sheep. And I wouldn't have known that without Bakar. Because Bakar already tells me that you're allowed to keep the hide. So Tzon's got it to me, telling me something additional to that. So Tzon's telling me that I can keep the sheep. I'm sorry, that I can keep the wool. Maybe that's why I need Bakar to kind of set us up for Tzon. So that I know already that I can keep the hide. And so Tzon's there to come and tell me what? I can keep the wool as well. So the Gemara says, maybe that's what the Bakar is doing. It's kind of like a setup for Tzon. So Babaka Lasui already asked Tzon Lasui Gizaso. Ilo Kasurachman Abaka lo hava mina Tzon Agav Ora in Agav Gizaso lo. That would never have happened. Meaning, even without Bakar, I wouldn't have had such a havamina. Because if that's the whole point the Torah is trying to generate, all that could be generated by just the word Bakar. The Torah could have just simply said Bakar, not, I guess the Gemara's point over here is Babakar, but the Torah could have just simply said the word Bakar. Now Tzon is left as an additional point, they came to because of Rechman Tzon, Dafil Agav Gizasa, Babakar Lamali. But now that I have the word Tzon, which means comes to tell me then that for Tzon I can keep not only the hide but the wool as well. So once I know that by Tzon, so then Bakar. So what's left to teach me? Hashet Tzon Agav Gizasa is Davda Bakar Gabe Orami Baye. What's the Chiddush left in Bakar? That I can keep the hide. I already got that point from Tzon. Hainu de kamer of Yochanan. Mandam and tamer galiba bakar. Liba de ben bagbag. Mavlin manan lebei mesusa. And so that's Rav Yochanan's point. I don't know why, according to ben bagbag, you have the example of bakar. I don't know what the chiddush is there that I don't already get from Tzon, from Yain, and from Sheikhar. It sounds like bakar is just simply superfluous and unnecessary. And that's what Rav Yochanan says, so I don't have a pshat in this drasha of Ben Bagbag, and the Gemara leaves us off right there. Okay, good. All right, aside from all that, let's just take stock of where we are, where we're at right now in the Gemara. We're talking about what we can buy. We took a little bit of a tangent in terms of the world of Havla'a, of really talking about how the purchase is going on. In the case of Basar, the Bakar, the meat. In the case of Tzon, the meat. In the case of Yayin, the wine. In the case of Sheikhar, the infusion of taste. But in terms of all that, you get along with it the hide of the animal, the wool of the sheep, the barrel of the wine, and the water that comes along with the infused taste. Okay, and that all taught us this whole concept of Havla'a, which all brings us back to what about using your kesef maaser money to buy water, salt water? And the Gemara's essential answer to that is no, you can't buy salt water. If there's some oil inside of the salt water, then yes, through the principle of Havla'a, where my principal purchase is going on the oil, and then the salt water comes along for the ride. So far, so good. And now we continue. As long as we're here, the Gemara now is going to take this opportunity to discuss some of the very basics of Klal u'Prat u'Klal, as you are, has already set us up for this Gemara a little bit earlier. The Gemara says, "B'mai kamiflagi, Rav Yehuda ben Gadish, Rav Lazar." Vehani tanai de la kaman. So the Gemara says, remember how we start off this morning? A brisa by Rav Yehuda ben Gadish talked about buying with your kesef maaser money the schmaltz of fish, fish brine. And then they said, no, intestines of the fish. So in other words, and we're going to see later on, some tanaim are of the opinion, you can't even buy fish. Fish is out of the question. So what's that issue over here? The Gemara says over here, what that issue is, how to darshan the psukim. Darshi ribu miyuta v'hani tanai darshi klalu uprate. It's the question of what's the methodology, what's the correct methodology. We've seen this already a number of times throughout Shas. And here's another good example, good illustration. Look, I know the basic format. It's general, it's specific, it's general. There are two different methodologies in terms of how to darshan it. We kind of get locked into klalu uprate klal, because every morning we're reading the Brice of Rabbi Shmuel. So we know Klal u'Prat u'Klal. However, there's an entire different, not entirely, there's a different methodology, which is Ribui u'Miut u'Ribui. And now the Gemara is going to point out, we've seen this before, what exactly is the difference between what it will be your methodology. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish, Rabbi Lazar, Darshi Ribui u'Miut. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Gadish and Rabbi Lazar use the principle of ribui umiut, and now the Gemara is going to illustrate. Riba. So first the Torah says whatever you want, that's a ribui. Ba'bakar v'tzon v'yayin v'sheichar miut. Uvichol asher tishach nafshecha chaza v'riba. Riba umiut v'riba. So now the Gemara is going to explain methodologically how does this work. Riba hakol. My Rabbi, Rabbi Kalmila. So when you work with the principle of ribui miyot de ribui, so basically when the Torah starts off with a ribui, with the generality, it is a sweeping generality. Meaning when the Torah goes in and says, take your kesef maaser money and buy whatever you want, you know what the Torah means? Torah means whatever you want. Meaning almost with no limitation and no reservation, riba hakol. Kalmila umay miyot. So now when the Torah gives examples, all the Torah is doing now is basically just picking out a couple of things that you can't use your money with. You can't buy with your money. Meaning the examples are not there to define. The examples are there just to sort a couple of things out, to take a couple of things out of the ribui. Umay miyot la Rabbi Elazar miyot seer. Now according to Rabbi Elazar, when the Torah gives these examples, the Torah says, look, it has to be the food itself. It can't be a little bit of brine that comes off the fish. And Rav Yehuda ben Gadish, miyut mayim ha-melach. And according to Rav Yehuda ben Gadish, the Torah is coming to exclude water and salt, which has no sustaining ability whatsoever. It has to be something which sustains. V'hani tanai, good. So that is an exposition of the tanai that we saw in the beginning of this morning. Rabbi Eliezer, Rav Yehuda ben Gadish, that's because they use the methodology of ribui umiyut. V'hani tanai darshi klal u'prate, d'tanya. And now, the upcoming tanayim, which we haven't seen yet, we're going to see right now. So they use the methodology of klal prat. D'tanya. Mahaprat meforsh pri mi pri v'gidule karka av kol pri mi pri v'gidule karka. You see, when you use klal prat or klal, so it works basically like this. The Torah says you go buy whatever you want. Then the Torah gives examples. What the Torah is doing, if you're using the methodology of klal prat, is the Torah is actually defining. Meaning, the klal doesn't mean everything. The klal means, basically, there's a listing of things that you could buy. And here, let me illustrate by example. Klal uprat. The prat's there to define the klal. That wasn't true by ribu imiyut. By ribu imiyut, the Torah just simply means everything. Miyut, the examples are just there to whittle a little bit away from what everything is. But it's just simply to take something out of the generality. When you're using the operation of klal prat, so there, it's klal, but wait, let's define it, prat. Prat becomes a definition of the klal. So the Gemara says, so what do you see with these examples? All these examples are pri mi pri vigidule karka. It's all fruit generating fruit, meaning that all these are reproduce. Animals reproduce, fruit reproduce, there are seeds, you plant them in the ground. Everything here reproduces, and it grows from the ground. By the way, did you see what the Gemara did? The Gemara looked at animals, and the Gemara says, animals grow from the ground. Animals don't exactly grow from the ground. They get sustained from the ground. But the Gemara here in this context describes animals as gedule karka. Okay? So the Gemara says, so if it's primi privi gedule karka, so as we're going to see in just a moment, not fish. Fish are not considered gedule karka. Well, we'll get to that in just a moment. I've called primi privi gedule karka. V'tani idach. And the Gemara quotes another brisa, Ma prat meforsh vlad vlados haaretz, av kol vlad vlados haaretz. So the Gemara brings in brisa number two. Now in brisa number two, same basic story, klal upradu klal, it's just a question of what the definition is. It is, Ma prat meforsh vlad vlados haaretz. It is a derivative of the land. Anything which is a derivative of the land. So here we have two brises that we just learned back to back. They both, instead of using ribu yamiyot, use the methodology of klal prat. There's a subtle difference between the two of them. The first, if you look back, says primi pri vigi dule karka. Here it's the second brisa, vlad vlados haaretz. Gemara wants to know what's the difference between them. That's exactly the difference. The difference is going to be fish. So lamanda amar primi privi gidule karka hani dagim gidule karka ninu. I made a mistake earlier. I said brisa number one excludes fish. I was incorrect. Brisa number one includes fish. Fish are considered gidule karka. Now that's, again, it's difficult to hear, which is why I made a mistake just a moment ago. But it's difficult to hear, why are fish considered gedule karka? Because how do fish get a nourishment? They get nourishment from that which grows on the seabed, right? All the vegetation that grows on the seabed is used to nourish the fish, therefore fish are considered gedule karka. Okay? According to the second brisa, Laman Damar, Vlad Vlados Haaretz, Dagimi Maya Ivrei. Well, if it's Vlad Vlados Haaretz, it means it has to be something which reproduces, and it was generated from the ground. Meaning it was literally born of the ground. We know, right, Maisa Bracious, fish were produced in the water. Animals were produced on the ground. By the way, what about birds? Remember this? This is Gemara in Chulin. This is a long time ago. We're actually going to need this information for today. Well, if animals come from the ground, and fish come from the water, what are birds? What was the original material to make birds? Combination. Right? In other words, birds are a combination of fish and animal. Mud. The Gemara is going to say this in just a moment. Mud was used to create the birds. So, Brisa number two has it that it has to be something which was born out of land, out of ground. So that includes animals, bakar, tzon, yayin, and sheikhar. They come from the ground. They're born of the ground. Masha ain kain fish, which are not born of the ground. But again, just taking instead of looking at the Gemara microscopically, just taking a big picture look at the Gemara, so basically what we have are two trains of thought in the Gemara in terms of how to darshan this pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. Do we use the principle of ribui miyot ribui, which obviously gets us to a much wider range of what you can buy, because ribui miyot ribui basically says everything, with a couple of exceptions, water, salt, okay? But basically everything, or no, klal pradu klal, which is basically a way of defining, meaning the Torah says whatever you want, but wait, let's first define, and we give the definitions of bakar, tzon, yayin, shechar. Now, by the way, if you work with klal prat, if the Torah didn't give a klal afterwards, and it was just klal prat, what do we know? Klal prat, ein lecha ela masha beprat. There, if the Torah gives you definitions without a klal afterwards, that's it. Meaning, you don't have now a right to say it's anything else because the prat's the definition. When the Torah comes back afterwards and give a klal, the Torah is telling you that you could take your definitions and basically they become prototypes. Anything like the definitions. But basically, klal prat uklal is a definition-based drasha. Masha'inkem, when it comes to ribu umiyut, it's not a definition-based drasha. It is just basically, it's everything, but we'll just whittle a couple of things away. Right? It's two totally different methods of how to darshan, generality, specific generality. Good. Back to the Gemara. The Gemara says, does Abaye really maintain that that dagim are gedule karka? But the Gemara says, but wait one moment. Don't we know the following? This takes us back all the way to Makos. I never now know whether Makos is closer behind us or closer ahead of us in the Daf Yomi, but whatever. Some time ago we learned Makos, and the Gemara Makos talks about eating bugs. And eating bugs is an issur in the Torah. Even if you don't eat a kezias of bug, but you eat an entire bug, you're liable to Makos in the Torah. Why? Because of the principle of birya. When you eat an entire organism, so you're going to get Makos, receive Makos, even though it is significantly less than the shear of a kezias. And the Mishnah Makos talks about the following. Achol putisa, if I ate a putisa, Rashi explains sheretz amayim, some bug that comes out of the water. So loka arbaus, you're subject to 4 makos. Nemala, if you eat an ant, loka chamesh, you get 5 makos. Tzira, loka shesh, if I eat a flying bug, right, a gnat, a wasp, whatever it is, you get 6 makos. Please take a look at Rashi. We're not going to go through it together right now. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi cites the psukim. By the way, it works out perfectly in terms of Parshas HaShavua. Right, really perfectly. Right, it's all the psukim that Rashi quoted from this week's Parsha Shmini. Good. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi goes to the psukim. In the meantime, however, the point over here is as follows. The putisa, which is the bug that comes out of the water, according to Abaye, Abaye described as being gedule karka. If you're right, if it's gedule karka, so then putisa should be like namala. Just like by namala you got 5 sets of malchus, so too by the putisa you should get 5 sets of malchus. The Gemara asks this very question. V'imisa putisa nami luke mishuma sheretz sheretz al haaretz. There should be another set of malchus for putisa. Elam aravina ofosika benar. So the Gemara says, you're right. Fish are not gidule karka. So even though I was wrong a couple of moments ago, I'm back on the side of right. Meaning fish are not gidule karka. You're absolutely right. So now, what's the subtle difference between Brisa number 1 and Brisa number 2? Ika benayu laman damar primi privi gidule karka, haninami gidule karka ninu. O laman damar vlav lados haaretz haniofos min harakak nivru. The question is going to be that of birds. Meaning, can I take my Meister Sheni money and purchase birds with my Meister Sheni money? If the vort is gidule karka, so then, yeah, birds are kedule karka. If you say the second brisa, which is vlad vlados haaretz, it has to be born from the ground. The material that was used to make this item was basically earth. Well, that's not true by birds. Birds were made of a combination of earth and water. Birds are made up of mud. Good. Mandamabe ofos maitaima. So the Gemara goes on to explain this a little bit further. Mandamarbe ofos kasavar klalabasra dafka prat uklal nasa klal mosif ala prat visrabiluhu komile. Now the Gemara gives us another layer of understanding, klalu prat uklal. Because you see, what we're doing now, we're going to stay specifically on the methodology of klalu prat uklal. But even within klal u'prat u'klal, there are basically, the Gemara is going to provide for us two ways to analyze it. Is it, I'm just going to first spell it out, and then we're going to see it inside the Gemara. Is it basically klal u'prat with an attachment of a klal afterwards? Or no, is it prat u'klal with an attachment of a klal to begin with? Now I know we're speaking in tremendous subtleties over here, but it actually makes a difference, a practical difference, as we're discussing right now. You see, if it's klal uprat, with then just an attachment to the klal afterwards, so we've already given a definition. Meaning klal uprat tells us it's super defined. Here it is, you can buy whatever you want, but wait. Bakar tzon yayin sheichar. Klal uprat. And then the klal afterwards says, and then you can include things which are like these. But in other words, it's really tightly defined, but then you can just stretch it a little bit and you buy other things, but you have to work within the definition. That's klal uprat uklal. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is really it's prat uklal, meaning example, and then the Torah basically expanding it, but with a klal in the front, so now it's basically, we're not super limited in terms of definitions nor prototypes, meaning these are examples and we could be a little bit more liberal in what we're going to include as anything that resembles these items. But it doesn't have to be following the exact prototype as the Torah describes in the middle. Let's see this inside. So, manda marbi ofos my tame, or manda mamit ofos my tame. Manda marbi ofos, if you're going to include birds in what I can buy with my meister sheni money, kasav klal basra dafka, prat uklal, nasa klal mosif ala prat. Because basically, it's the klal basra. It is the second klal that the Torah really, I wanted to emphasize, as I described just a moment ago, it now turns basically into prat uklal. Prat uklal nasa klal mosif ala prat. Vesrabalu komili vani klal kama lemute kol dolo damile mishneit stadim. And the first klal is basically to say, okay, it's got to reflect like what we've described in the middle, but not super tightly. Shneit stadim, from two sides. I know you can argue in terms of what the sides are, but in other words, birds is close enough. Right? Bakar, tzon, yayin sheichar, yeah, birds as well. Right? Pri, meaning it regenerates, just like the examples do. Gedule karka, it gets its nourishment from the ground. Okay, good. Birds is good. Uman de ma'amid ofos. Now, if you're excluding birds, kasever klala kama dafka klal prat, so now you're basically looking at klal prat uklal. It's fundamentally klal uprat. It's first the generality, then the specific. So basically now, you're defining. And then, ve'in b'chlal ala masha b'prat. Hani in midiach rinilo. Ve'ahani klal abasra l'ribuyi kol dadami le'mi shlosh et stadim. And now, once it's super tightly defined, so what does that next klal do? It basically says, we'll allow other things into this world, but it's got to really resemble that which we defined, which we super defined. The definitions are bakar tzon, yayin sheichar. So anything else that we're going to include has to really model and mimic these items. These items regenerate. These items are also born from the ground, not just nourished from the ground or born from the ground. So therefore, fish, absolutely not. Birds, no, neither. Because birds are not born from the ground. Birds are born from the combination of water and earth. Mud, rakak. So therefore, birds are not included. So again, it's another layer of understanding this whole world of klal uprat uklal. Okay, quickly. That was a lot of information. It's very conceptual. We basically had now two basic methodologies, ribui miyod ribui versus klal upar to klal. If you work with ribui miyod ribui, what can you buy with your maaser sheni money? Basically anything, with the only exception being not salt, not water, but basically anything, anything which has food qualities and nourishing qualities. So that would include birds, it would include fish. And if you work with klalu pradu klal, so it's going to be a much tighter definition. Certainly fish are out of the question. You can't buy fish with your maaser sheni money. What about birds? Debatable. And the Gemara points out that really the debate hinges on how you understand the methodology of klal uprat or klal. Is it fundamentally klal uprat with a klal attached at the end, or no, is it fundamentally prat uklal with a klal attached at the beginning? Okay. That is, in a nutshell, what we just went over in the Gemara. Okay, that was all conceptual. Now the Gemara is going to get practical, but I'll tell you the truth. It's going to be so practical, the Gemara is going to refer to a lot of vegetation and a lot of growth, where you're going to see, I'm going to really struggle in terms of knowing what we're even talking about. So the conceptual was just better for me, because, you know, conceptual we all understand. At least I understand. But now the Gemara is going to give very, very specific examples. So good luck to us all. Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmei de Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas Mishmei de Rav Ma'arvin. So here's what you can use for your Eruv Tchomim. We're back to Eruv, meaning that was an entire discussion all revolving around Maaser Sheni. But you understand, though, because what the rules of our Mishnah laid out for Maaser Sheni are the same thing which is true for Eruv Tchomim. You could use all foods you want except for water and salt. So now we're back to Eruv Tchomim. So what could I use for my Eruv? I could use Papuin, Chaglogligos, Ugad Gedanios. Avalo Bechaziz, Velo Bechafnios. But you cannot use Chaziz and you cannot use Chafnios. Okay. And let the struggling begin. Papuin, so a type of vegetation. Rashi tries to help us out. As Ichaglogligos, a type of spice. As so is the good gadanios. Okay. Chaziz, as we'll see in just a moment, that's green wheat, meaning unripe wheat, and chafnios are unripe figs. Unripe dates. Okay. The Gemara goes now step by step. Good gadanios mim arvin v'atanya. Now the Gemara says, really, you could use the third item that was mentioned. V'tanya good gadanios merube banim yochlu chashuche banim lo yochlu. So the Gemara says that it happens to be that whatever this vegetation is, it's bad for a man to eat it. It would sterilize the man. And in general, there's a mitzvah on the man of peruvu. We just talked about it in yesterday's daf. So anything which would sterilize a man and which would impede him from having children would be no good. So the Gemara just wonders, it's a little bit strange that you're telling me that you can make an Eruv with a type of vegetation which really sterilizes a man, right? Shouldn't he not be eating it? Now, it's interesting. Read carefully how the Gemara presents it. Good gedanios merube banim yochlo. If you already have a lot of children, okay, a little bit of sterility is not so bad. And chashuche banim lo yochlo. But if you don't have a lot of children, then you have no business eating this food item which sterilizes. V'imukshu lezerah merube banim lo yochlo. And if this good gedanios gets so ripe where the seeds now are hard, so then nobody should be eating it, because in addition to sterilizing, it's just simply unhealthy. So Gemara is asking a very simple question. So you're talking about a type of herb, a type of plant, which really most people shouldn't be eating. So the Gemara says, and that you could use for Eruv? So Tirgamash Lahukshalazera Umirubebanim. So your first answer is going to be a very simple one. Okay, maybe who can make an Eruv with it? First of all, the seeds aren't super hard yet. And number two, we're talking about somebody who already has a lot of children. Or the Gemara says, no, maybe we're talking about chashuche banim, somebody who doesn't have a lot of children. And look, didn't we learn in our Mishnah that the Nazir can make an Eruv with wine? Okay, he can't drink the wine, but somebody else can. Same thing over here with our good gedanios. So the chashuche banim can't eat it, but somebody else can. Hachanami, afagav delo chazil ahai, chazil ahai. So the Gemara says, it's a food, it's edible by some people, it works as an Erev. Or the Gemara says, we're talking about a strain of this good Gedanios, which the Gemara refers to as Handakuki, and, sorry, Handakuki Midai, and it's the type of strain, it has no ill effects whatsoever, and maybe that's what the Braisa is talking about. Okay, I told you these examples are going to be so specific, like, I'll just say the words, but obviously I have no idea what we're talking about in terms of what the actual vegetable is. Chaziz. Chaziz, says the Gemara, said the Braisa, you can't make an Erev using chaziz. It's unripe wheat, green wheat. The Gemara makes it, quotes a statement by Rav Yehuda, that if I have hops, or if I have chaziz, so A, you can make an Erev with it, and B, when you eat it, make sure to make a bracha, and the correct bracha would be Bori Pri Adama. So Lokasha, I'm a kamadas Rav Labava, halabasa de asa Rav Labava. So the Gemara says, point well taken, the original statement of Rav, who says that you can't use chaziz, that was when he was living in Israel. In Israel, nobody ate the chaziz. But then when he came to Bavel, he's looking around, right? We see this a lot of times. When Rav came to Bavel, it was like eye-opening for him. They did this crazy thing. They said halal on Rosh Chodesh, right? Which he thought was crazy. He didn't understand what was going on. Turned out that they only said chatzi halal, so it kind of made him feel a little bit better. And another thing that he noticed when he got to Bavel, everyone's eating chaziz in Israel. No, nobody ate it, and here everyone's eating it. So it's a food. So the Gemara asks very sharply, "Uvava havia ruba da'alma?" And so what? So they're eating chaziz and Bavel. Can we say that the Babylonians are crazy? Well, I wouldn't like to say that because we're learning Talmud Bavli. But in other words, their eating habits aren't going to determine what is and what isn't a food. Okay, so in the world of statistics, so they're an outlier. So what? An outlier is not going to determine the halacha. If I have beans, barley. I think it's fenugreek, and even if it is, I don't know what that is. But but the point is, if you planted them for the vegetable aspect of them, meaning not the seed, but the green. So baladait also called Adam. You are an outlier. You do not represent the norm, and so therefore, it's the green aspect. The green parts of it are not subject to trumas and meisers. Lefichach zaran chayav v'irakan pater. The seed, you'll be chayav, but not the green. Hashal chayav v'agar gershah zaran liyarek mitasrin yarek v'zaran zaran
v'zaran. A few minutes late, the weather slowed down some of the buses. Just a few more minutes.
If it's cress or gagir, where you planted it for yarek, for the greens, mitasrin, yarek v'zara. Zaran l'zara, mitasrin, zara v'yarek. These items, people eat both. The green, the leafy part of it, and also the seed as well. Again, the point being is that if you're an outlier, you will not define for halacha what is food and what isn't food. Here also, when we're talking now about our chaziz, Rav comes to Bavel and he finds they're eating chaziz in Bavel. So what? The Gemara is arguing, aren't they an outlier? So ki kama Rav, bidagnu yasa. Again, another strain of chaziz, which apparently is eaten and it is edible, and that's why Rav says that you can use it for your Erev. Let's just do one more of these, and we'll finish for today. Zerek Agir Lamai Chazi. I'm Rav Yochanan. Shekain Rishonim Shalahayilam Pilpulim Shochim Masam Umatbilin Bosatzli. Before the discovery of pepper, says the Gemara, Zerek Gargir, the seeds of Gargir were used as a condiment for the meat. Okay, let's stop over here. All right, time is up. I know we're a little bit behind. Stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. Tomorrow Shabbos. Okay, I know. That came awfully quickly. Hopefully tomorrow we'll do a little bit of catch up. Again, more discussion tomorrow about various fruits and vegetables that grow out of the ground and the brachas that should, and whether or not you can make an Eruv. regarding some of the more obscure fruits and vegetables. More vegetables. Continue Refuah Shlema for Binyamin Zevakon, Mishar and Rivka, for Rafal Zak Avram, and Yakir Avigar, Bechanan, and Akasha Maratek, Zvarchu, Zaki, Sol, Ficha, Chib, and Tar Mitzvah, Shenemar, Nechavetz, and Mansi, Koya, Dilter, Aviadir.